Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
This is a hell of a way to start a podcast, huh?
Yeah. I guess we might as well just go right into it. He's already touching it. Today's episode is brought to you by Blumon. Everyone always asks me, hey, Schmo, what kind of product do you use for your hair to get it to stick all to the side? I use Blumon. I love their stuff, and they have a discovery kit right here for all five of their types, the Monarch, the Hybrid, the Cavalier, Original, and the Fist Sample. What you just used right there, Kevin, is their Sen Volume Cream. When your hair is a little damp after the shower, you put it on, add some volume, let it dry, and then you put the product, one of these, in there. But that's good stuff. I love using the Fist Sample. It sticks and holds very well. All the different types of clays and the different finishes. Check them out. Use the promo code SCHMO. Get 10% off. Blumon.com. And make sure you check out the quiz, too. They have an online quiz. You take that. We'll provide that link as well, where you could kind of see what you can test out based off of your hair type. There it is. Blumon.com.
All right. Yeah. We're off to a good start.
We're off to
I'm
going to
go train after this. So,
oh, nice.
You know, I figured that'll keep my hair together. And that's the thing. When you try and maintain good hair and then you're grappling and rubbing up against people, sweating and shit, like, that's hard.
Yes, it is.
Process.
And without further ado, yes. Welcome back to the Schmo Zone podcast, episode 89. I'm Dave Schmolenson, a.k.a. The Schmo. My co-host is
Helen Yee with Helen Yee Sports.
And one of the most electrifying men in mixed martial arts. He was a hot free agent for a hot second. He's Kevin Lee.
Yes, sir. Appreciate y'all having me. Can we address the elephant in the room?
Please.
That you're using your regular voice right now?
Okay. That's fine.
For a lot of people, that's I'm pretty sure that's strange with them, you know? I'm shook. I was expecting the schmo game, you know? But this is your regular, just David voice.
That's true. I now that I think about it, I don't know if I've ever really used this voice that much around you.
No. I mean, once the cameras, like, flip off, then you got a, like, incredible ability to just, like, switch it. And then it's like, oh, okay, yeah. Okay, he's not Schmo anymore. But now, all day, Schmo.
I appreciate it. I don't really think about it that much, but thanks for putting that into perspective. And I guess that is an elephant in the room.
Yeah. So what do you think, though, of David? Because they are kind of different people, right?
They're different, but I can appreciate both sides of it. I can appreciate the Schmo side of just, like, being a bigger-than-life type of personality. I feel like I've done that, too, like, a while. And then you kind of, like, find the middle ground in there somewhere. You know, between being just totally normal to being, like, larger than life. So when you like the larger than life, like, I think the first time we met was in Atlanta.
It was before Atlanta. I was actually going to bring all this up,
the
and I'm glad
conference.
You are.
We trained,
but we did the Schmo versus the Pro that day in Atlanta at that press conference. But I remember we met, I think it was at the UFC headquarters. They did some sort of, like, mingle, some sort of function. It was I interviewed you then. It was I don't remember exactly.
Should it be so many, it's hard to remember.
It was 2018. I know it was 2018. And I'm trying to remember what it was around, but it was way before UFC 236. It was the first time I interviewed you, and it was the first time I did the Schmoack around you. And I have such a huge appreciation of you. I've loved, even before I got mainstream into covering this sport, like, all of your come up, all your rise up until the interim title fight with Tony Ferguson. I loved everything about you. You know, you're young, rambunctious, early 20s. You brought such a good flair to the game in MMA, and that's what I think has stuck with you, and even why UFC, not UFC, you're a popular fighter because of everything you bring to the table.
I appreciate that. I feel like and now it's kind of like we've been on a journey, right? So it's like now I'm kind of trying to show growth, You know, I was this young, kind of rambunctious kid, kind of showing the larger-than-life side. But then there's, like, a really real side to me, too, which I had to kind of get more in touch with and bring to reality. And now I'm trying to find, like, a happy medium between the two, because I do think there's a lot of people that have watched me on the come up and see where I'm at now, and now they want to see, like, okay, where we going next, because I think it's a lot of big shit to get to, you know?
It's kind of like a whole nother chapter.
Yeah.
Yep. A whole nother chapter to the book that you're writing right now before your eyes, and you're still a relatively young guy, especially in sports.
Yeah, yeah. And I can give you your flowers, too, you know? We need you guys to do the real job for us, you know? It's like the storytelling and stuff. Like the fighting part, we do that anyway. I was doing this way before anybody knew that we were doing it. But the storytelling and the reason why people want to watch you fight, I feel like you guys do a damn good job on it. Helen was interviewing me when I was at Roy Jones' gym before nobody was interviewing me.
Yeah, we go way back.
Or before it was a thing, you know? Like, so I feel like it's kind of sad to be entering into this new chapter, but it's nice to, like, be able to look back and appreciate some of them moments where we come up off of it, you know?
Of course. And one of the biggest thing about the new chapter is, like, what you guys just talked about in April 2019. I believe that's when the schmo, right, his mm-hmm. question to Dana White about the 165-pound division, and now you're about to fight
for that's crazy,
a Habib's
huh?
organization, yeah.
As a 165-pounder, we starting it up. And I got to thank Schmo for that. He kind of, you know, I may have said it a couple times, but when one person says it is not enough, it's like you got it in front of Dana's attention and other people start saying it even more. So now we actually making it a reality, which is crazy, right? It's
a much-needed reality, too, because there's so many talented fighters at 155 and 170, and that 15-pound gap mm-hmm. between the two, like, why float between the two and kill yourselves when just have naturally increments of 10? So of all people, too, Habib and his organization starting this off, and he swoops you off the market and free agency, and now you have an opportunity to, you know, set a whole new record and set the entire 165-pound division, you know, ablaze.
Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to further the sport with this, you know. I look at this more like a partnership. It's not so much that I signed underneath them. We're just going to work together through this and build something bigger for the sport. I think it's time for the sport to get bigger, not just the UFC or not just Bellator, not just PFL. You know, it's like, okay, let's make MMA as big as it could possibly be. You know, get it on level with boxing or something like that, where boxing is its thing now. It's been around for 100 years, but at some point it had to go through the same growing process.
And why the hell not? Like, we were alive when we watched a whole new sport come to fruition. Imagine being alive in the early 20th century when baseball or football, basketball leagues started rising up, and you have the NBA, the NFL, and whatnot now. Yeah. But same thing with mixed martial arts and MMA. Like the UFC, obviously, that's the brand. That's the name mm-hmm. behind it. But now, as this sport is approaching 30 years young, mm-hmm. you see all these other promotions and opportunities, and people are really following at the time now where they're able to follow fighters rather than promotions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's so many people in this world that do it, too. There's so many amateur fighters. There's so many, like, low-level pros. I want to say it's like 20 or 30,000 fighters in general, you know? You're only going to hear about the top 100, something like that, 200 maybe. But there's so many stories that could be told that we all going through. I feel like it's kind of needed, you know?
Now, when we saw you about 2 weeks ago, it was in Miami for that huge Eagle FC press conference. Mm-hmm. And I remember you were telling me when I asked you about, like, an opponent for your Eagle FC debut, March 11th, you're interested in Diego Sanchez, and it looks like he's interested, too. Yep. So where does that kind of stand right now?
It looks like that fight's going to happen. We don't have a signed contract from Diego yet. So I can't officially announce that it's going on. You know, they want to do it in a special way and all this, right? They want to announce it themselves. I feel like sometimes we should just be flat out about it, just be real about it. That's what people like about fighting. It's fucking real. So the fight's gonna happen. We're trying to make it happen, but we waiting on Diego's side to finish. I'm not gonna, like, wait for a big announcement and all that shit.
So you're preparing to fight March 11th right here in 2022.
Yep.
Start things off at the beginning of the year.
Yep. So I'll be moving from Vegas in maybe 2 or 3 weeks now. January 15th is when I'm looking to move. So it's a lot of shit, train on top of moving across the country and all this. It's a lot to deal with, you know.
Have you packed yet?
I've cleaned first. I had to clean first. Packing is next. Next week is packing.
So you're moving to South Florida, and correct me if I'm wrong. Did you say you were training? You're going to be training out of Sanford MMA under Henry Hoof and that whole team.
Yep. Yeah, with Sanford.
So obviously, there's so many great gyms across the country, and a lot of people talk about the great gyms in South Florida. Mm-hmm. How'd you come to the conclusion of Sanford MMA?
You know, it was just something that kind of just came to me. Like somebody approached me with it. I think it was Derek Bronson talked to me about it first. And I know Eric Nixick's really close with Henry Hoof. They got a great relationship. So I just constantly kept hearing the name and the name. And I think people get confused on, like, how I do my training and stuff. I'm kind of just like a maverick. This is just the way I am. I love martial arts because it's everywhere, right? So I kind of just like training and traveling and finding different people that I stick with and stick to. So as soon as I walked into Sanford, it was already like a couple guys that I naturally kind of gravitated towards, you know? So it made it make even more sense that would be home to me.
They have an amazing gym attached to the next door. Yeah,
huge.
The facility's fantastic.
Nice. Like, the main thing about the UFC is you got the PI, but there you got all of that you need, you know?
Right.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, yeah, amazing weather, too.
Yeah, that too.
All year round.
Nice girls and the whole shebang.
Oh,
got everything you need. What more can you ask for?
Just when we were in Miami, we were just walking to that press conference, and we're mm-hmm. like, wow, 9 days away from Christmas, and it's sunny, and it's 80 degrees and humid. Is this real life right now?
Yeah.
That's South Beach. That's.
Yeah, I'm about to get used to that. Honestly, part of it is I'm kind of getting a little over Vegas, too. Kind of been over Vegas, too, a little bit. Like the living itself. So it's time for a change.
I can understand that.
We're going to miss you here, though, but we're excited for your new chapter in Florida.
I appreciate that. I'm going to miss y'all, too, you know? Like, I'll miss everybody that I came up with here. There's so many, like, people that I've trained with and, like, different gyms and different good people that I've met. Like, I'm going to miss all that, you know?
I don't think we got to say this on our last episode. And by the way, this is the last episode of 2021. Oh, so, this is crazy. Well, that's
making history all day, huh?
Yeah, well, you're the great person to cap it all off with. But one thing that really impressed me about visiting that press conference and checking out the facility, it's how innovative things are going to be over there. They're making it seem like it's like an apex on the West, everything that they're going to be able to do. And it's not just MMA matches. They're going to be able to do Muay Thai, regular boxing matches. They're going to have a great facility, very similar to the PI, where you can do recovery, where you can do strength and conditioning and all the different types of disciplines and practices you can get out of it. But also what I like, too, and you feel me on this, too, is how invested they are into the future, in crypto, to the metaverse and everything like that. Aren't you getting paid in Bitcoin?
Yeah. I'll be the first athlete paid in Bitcoin, so... I think there's been a couple NFL guys. There's been an NBA guy that did it too, but I'll be the first fighter to be paid in Bitcoin.
So did you decide that you wanted to be paid in Bitcoin, or that's how they're going to pay every fighter?
No, I decided. Yeah, it was something that we...
his choice.
Yeah, my choice. It was something that we negotiated with them. But it was big to me. Like, I feel like the more we use these things, the more value that they'll have. So you got to practice what you preach. So if I practice Bitcoin, I got to get paid in it. I want to start paying people in it. I want to, you know, do the whole shebang.
It's crazy that this is really here. It's in the onset.
It's now. It's not now. Like this is the future or anything like that. It's now. You know, they're talking about throwing fights in the metaverse and having people watch them virtually. And it's now, you know. I just bought my dad a Oculus for Christmas the other day. So he's going to get to watch me fight from... you know, whenever they decide to do that.
It's absolutely amazing. Yeah, it's now. And the people that are not on the train now will eventually be laggards. You know, they're late to the party and everything like that.
The way I see it is kind of like the YouTube bang before it really, like, got going. like it's we're gonna enter into a new wave of this. Like before YouTube was a thing, people was like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" Yeah. Like we're gonna watch CNN, we gonna watch TV. Like come, get on with that kiddie shit. And you see now, like it's huge. It's way bigger than anything that you'll ever see on TV. I feel like this next section of the internet is gonna be the same thing.
It's crazy too, because when we were growing up, everyone always talked about us as kids, you're the future, you're the future. And then at a certain point, we continue to age, time continues to go by faster, and we're no longer the future. It's the decade behind us and the two decades behind us. So if we're sitting here at the age we're at now, you know, all of us are in the same age group, age bracket, and we just say, oh, fuck this, this is too complicated, this is not our era, this is not our generation, we're going to be left behind. You know, the way social media rewards you for being first and using things when they come out and evolve with it, if you're not with this stuff now, you're going to be left behind.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just the way of the world and the universe, too. You know, if you're not on the next wave, you're just going to die off, which is fine. You know, we need that. But we need that next wave. We need those pioneers. We need those pushers into the next generation. So that's why I was kind of happy when they approached me with this deal, and I see how much flexibility they have on doing stuff like that. It makes me more excited for it. It's
The one question I didn't ask, you could probably answer this question. Are you going to be allowed to market on your shorts, or are they going to have – Oh, so you could just like kind of Bellator does, and you know that with your brother, you can market all over your shorts the way the early UFC days were.
Yeah, which is a little more creative freedom too, you know? We're going to take it away from the Condom Depot shit though. I ain't having none of that on my ass. you know, I'll rock Boohoo Man, and they'll make a, we already in contact with them of making me some really nice, like real clean type of shorts, you know? I think we're going to step up some fashion. Fashion has kind of already gotten into MMA anyway. I want to say maybe like 5 years ago, you guys think? People start doing that Dapper Scrappers and, you know, people start kind of dressing up for the events and stuff like that. So let's go ahead and combine it a little more in the actual cage.
I like it.
Yeah,
I like it.
Even on your Instagram, I've seen posts before where like you're really dressed up, like you're into fashion.
Yeah. I always have been.
It's got some of the best looks at the press conference.
I know.
I always have been since I was a kid. I just ain't had no money when I was a kid, you know? Now that I got a little money, like, all right, yeah, let's show it out a little bit.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I'm right there with you. Not me, myself, but the schmo is all about the fashion. Like I just got this new jacket, right? And I'm sitting here and I'm just gloating about the seams and the design and everything like that.
Yeah.
I feel you on every level. It's important.
It's a good way to, like, express yourself, right? True. You gotta. Like, that's what somebody sees before you even open your mouth. And most of the time, I don't really do much talking either, you know? Like, especially as a kid, I didn't really talk a lot. So, like, I always, like, tried to show something in a different way, you know? Like, that's why, like, when they had dress-up Fridays and stuff in high school and, you know, we had to wear a uniform every day, one day you get to wear your shit, like, I brought my shit out. Like, I like colorful, flashy. I like all that.
The flair.
Mm-hmm. It's necessary.
It's
you gotta have flair. You got to.
It separates you. It's what sells too. I mean, personality and performance, I think, are big indicators of getting that fan base, especially in your shoes.
And it makes people remember you too, you know? Like, I didn't even remember the first interview that you said we did, but I damn sure remember that second one when we were in Atlanta. And it was, I think it was the glasses that I remember the most. And I want to say the glasses is what I remember about Usman, too, the first time I met him. First time I met him, we were in Scotland. And we were guest fighters doing, you know, I didn't remember who was on the card. I think Gunnar Nelson was, maybe. But nobody knew who he was. I didn't know who he was. And then he walked through the hotel with, like, these see-through glasses, kind of aviator style. And I was like, I noticed him, like, right away, you know? And then that kind of image stuck in my head. And then he fought a couple times. Then he fought RDA. And then that's when I was like, oh, okay, no, the dude can really fight. But the first thing I always remembered about him was the glasses.
And now he's number one pound for pound.
Crazy. Right.
And a lot of people debate, right? Like, is it Usman or GSP for the welterweights?
Greatest welterweight. Yeah.
I don't like that people do that, though. it's GSP all the way, for one. Let's just get that out there. GSP, hands down, I don't even think it's possible to for him to beat it.
How come it's not possible for
unless
him
he goes up to 205 and fights John Jones? If he beats John Jones, then I'm saying, okay, he...
But what
he,
if he goes to 185 and gets a 185 belt?
George did that.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, against Bisping.
That's true.
He did that first. So if just because you do it too don't mean you're better than me all of a sudden. I already did that. If you go 205, you fight John Jones, you fight Jan Błachowicz, you fight Adesanya or something, all right, now we can talk. But before that, I hate that people.
What about the people that argued the level of competition that George faced and Usman faced, both as they're obviously the come up in the reign in the welterweight division?
But the level is always going to gain, you know? His level is gaining, too. I just think the new generation is a little bit better than the last generation. So we can't compare these. It's very hard to compare them, you know? You just got to look at his level and see his accomplishments and what he did. And I feel like it kind of shits on the person every time somebody says, oh, this is the new greatest of all time. Oh, he beat him out. Like, well, fuck, y'all said I was the greatest, like, this was like last week, you know? And all of a sudden, like, I ain't shit. So I hate that people kind of do that.
It's kind of like when people compare NBA players, right?
Right.
From different eras
and athletes. Yeah. But no, you bring up such a great point, though, too, because the sport's so young. Even the people that were first coming up in the sport, they didn't have, like, MMA gyms. They went to a boxing gym. They went to a jiu-jitsu gym, you know, wrestling. Now everything can be together, and people are coming up and like, oh, I want to be an MMA fighter. So they're training specific disciplines of the sport at a younger age that they normally wouldn't do.
These guys are getting good. Like, the young kids are fucking good now. Like, that's what keeps me motivated still now. Like, no matter how good I think I am, I'll go with like somebody who's on the come up, like a 21, 22-year-old, and he'll even do one move that I've never imagined before. Or, like, I just didn't think was possible. It's like, oh, fuck, this level's about to get crazy. Like, I better stay on my P's and Q's. Somebody gonna beat my ass one day.
Well, someone that's getting a lot of buzz, Khamzat Chimaev. Mm. What do you think about him?
I think he's just getting a lot of buzz. I'm not. People see him beat Li Jingliang, and all of a sudden he's like the new god or something, but... I've been in the gyms with both these guys, so he's all right, but he's all right, you know? He's not doing nothing that's, like, crazy or anything. Honestly, doesn't really impress me too much. He's just aggressive than a motherfucker.
Well, on the note of a Khamzat, if you look at, like, some of the people that are really getting pushed behind them, some of the big names, he's one of them. Yep. Paddy Pimblett's another name.
Yeah, Paddy's getting pushed.
Sugar Sean O'Malley's getting a big push right now. Do you think that the push they're getting, why do you think that is? Why do you think goes behind the push that they're getting right now, and if it's warranted or not?
The Khamzat push, I think, is to kind of make up for the gap that Khabib had. I think if they feel like he can get bigger than Khabib, that they may be able to kind of play with Khabib's ego a little bit. As humble as Khabib want to say he is, he's got an ego too. So I think if somebody is to be looked at as above him in his own community, then maybe he might make that comeback, and then they'll make a whole lot of money off of him. I think that's probably the push of why Khamzat. I mean, and he's exciting too. He talks some shit. He does his thing. He put on a great performance that last fight. And then I got to tip my hat to Sean O'Malley. Like, he knows how to come up. He did it the right way. Honestly, I wish I would have took a couple page or two out of his book and had that ability to kind of pick and choose my fights and put on great performances like that. He doing it the right way.
He wants strikers. He's been getting strikers, and he's showing his striking ability against these strikers.
Yeah, I'm not mad at him for it. I'm a little jealous. I ain't gonna lie. I'm a little jealous. He doesn't have to fight jiu-jitsu black belts and then the next fight a world-class striker. And then fight a world champion kickboxer, and then fight a wrestler, and he don't have to do that. So I'm a little jealous, but I tip my hat to him for doing that, though.
what you did to Gregor Gillespie in MSG, the wrestler, mm-hmm. and then that head kick knockout, like
heard around the world.
I mean, everyone was there. President Trump was at that fight and everything like that. Yeah. Everyone knows that was the best finish of that fight card. I mean, was that the Nate Diaz BMF Masvidal?
244. Yeah.
Masvidal fight too. Like, I mean.
So now my goal is to keep taking over Masvidal's town. You know. I'm making a little headway up in there.
Yeah, no, he's in Miami.
So that's the plan.
And then
a competitor.
And then Patty Pimblett, I guess Cage Warriors champion, Conor McGregor, like kind of.
You know, honestly, I don't know too much about Patty.
Okay.
I don't know too much about him. I just hear his name a lot. I saw the one fight, but I don't know too much about him. Like his back, what he doing or anything. Is it because of Conor and all that? Is he? Well, first, let's start this. Is he from Liverpool or something?
Liverpool.
Okay, all right.
So he's from the UK. So I guess he's not from Ireland, but like that region, close enough.
Well, it's, I think, Ian Gary, who also trains at Sanford. I think he's the one that's
Ian Gary, he's a middleweight. That's
welterweight?
Yeah, or welterweight. Yep.
Okay. Welterweight Ian Gary?
Yeah.
He
just made his UFC
debut. Actually, Madison Square Garden.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Okay.
His most recent card. He's there as well. No, I think, too, the way he's been winning in Cage Warriors, you could argue is probably even just as popular, if not more popular, than Conor McGregor, where he's been over there. And because he's probably that way because Conor McGregor was what he was.
Big. Yeah, I mean, he put on a damn good, exciting fight. Like, he's exciting. It seemed like he was willing to hang his chin out there in order to win. So I think they'll always push a guy like that. If you're willing to go out there and really put your health on the line and really get knocked out, then they'll give behind and give a good push. It's a little short-sighted. You know, your body just can't handle that. It can't keep up with that pace for too long. So I think that's why they give such a big push in the beginning to kind of get their money's worth before before they throw you in the trash. I don't mean to shit on the UFC like that, but hey, that's the reality. That's what it is. You know, I had a lot of fights with them. I gave a lot of blood. I damn near gave a tooth. Yeah. One of these pussies didn't knock it out yet, though. But
it's like, it is wobbling.
It's broken. Yeah. Hardest punch first hard punch I took, 2015 against Leo Santos, Jose Aldo's trainer. Yeah, he stepped back and cracked me with a right hand. Cracked it in the gum line.
Oh,
so ouch.
I've been waiting for somebody to knock it out ever since then. That's 2015. Still ain't happened yet.
Rather than
now you're inviting it to happen. You're like putting it into the universe.
I've been asking for this since like 2015.
No, all right, Diego.
Nobody can do it. Yeah, Diego, if you can knock this thing out, please do it, bro. I want to get a diamond one put in after that.
Oh, okay.
I've been trying, man. I've been trying to get somebody to knock it out.
He likes the flashy stuff.
Just a little, you know, just a little gleam to the smile.
Just one, though.
Yeah. Just one.
Oh, okay.
Just on the one that breaks off. A little gleam.
That's awesome.
So you're going to leave the gym right around the time, a week before, someone you know well, Francis Ngannou, the heavyweight champion of the world, the baddest man on the planet, defends the belt against Ciryl Gane, former training partner.
Yeah.
And I know he's been probably in the gym every single day throughout these holidays. It's coming up, and he knows the importance of this fight. And also, from a contract standpoint, too, this could potentially be his last fight in the UFC, which is crazy as well.
Yeah, yeah, it's huge, huge, a lot of pressure. But he's been putting in the work, more so than I've ever seen from Francis before. And that's not to shit on what he's done before, but he's putting on extra work now. I see him like after we train today, he'll probably be in there for an hour afterwards, jumping rope and on the treadmill and, you know, doing his thing. So much respect, much love to Francis.
Yeah, last week we interviewed Sean Strickland, and I think behind the scenes, in the background of my interview with him, he was like jumping rope the whole time.
Yeah. I mean, he's putting in the necessary work that he needs. This is a huge fight. Like I said, last one on his contract, it could be a... He's going to shake up a lot of shit after he does this. And I'm behind him 1,000%. It's like, it's a crazy time that we live in to be training and knowing the heavyweight champ like that.
Well, do you think we'll see more and more of this type of stuff happen in the UFC with the fighters?
But what do you mean shake up a lot of shit? What do you mean by that?
I think this could... after this fight, it could be one of those things that shake up the industry, you know, that shows us being more independent and shows us kind of taking our individuality back. You know, if Francis is the heavyweight champ of the world, he's that. It doesn't matter what anybody says or anything else. He's the heavyweight champ of the world. So once he's able to really solidify that, even without the UFC, then it's gonna shake up a lot of stuff.
Well, what do you think is influencing more and more UFC fighters or former UFC fighters to, like you said, kind of be independent and, in a way, bet on themselves and their brand?
Money. Money. The whole reason why we started this shit in the first place. Yeah. I didn't start this to be a UFC fighter. Like, the people who do that, they were lame before they even started it. You know, I started this shit for money. I was a broke kid from Detroit.
You wanted to be a doctor, didn't you?
Yeah, I was. Hey, look, I was going to do whatever was going to pay me the most and whatever I was going to get to first. If that was doctor and I could do that and show my kids that, then I wanted to be that. But this shit came up, and it's like, oh, we can make a whole lot. I can provide in a different way than I even saw. So that's the motivating factor. It's the motivating factor behind all this. For the people who just want the fame and to the recognition or to say they are something, they were going to get washed out anyway. So I think the money is going to be the big one.
But from the Francis standpoint, in addition to the money, you got to probably feel like it hurt him that they made, and not his ego a little bit, that they made an interim title fight when he had just defended like 4 months prior, whatever it was. It wasn't even half a year when they made the interim title fight between Ciryl Gane and Derek Lewis. They feel like that's got to affect the ego at least to an extent.
It did. I mean, and that's the motivating factor too, I think, behind this. That goes into your money. You know, when they recognize somebody else as the heavyweight champ too, all of a sudden, like, now there's somebody else on your same level. So your price drops to whatever his price is. So I think they keep doing stuff like that. It's going to keep driving more and more real people away from the UFC. I was hearing it on my come up and people saying who have already been in the UFC, like, oh, they treat you like shit once you're done. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. You know, you always like, yeah, whatever. That's you. That ain't going to be me. But once enough people keep saying, like, oh, this is how this person is, this is how this company is, this is how they treat people, it's true. That's what it is. And if they take your money and they take your respect and they take all away from you, it's like, why do we give you anything? Like, fuck you at this point.
Well, what advice would you give
kind of the next? I'm not saying fuck the UFC. Let me just pause. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry. All right.
No worries. What advice would you give the next generation of MMA fighters or young kids who do want to pursue this and, in a way, follow in your footsteps?
The biggest advice I could give is don't lose sight of the biggest goal, the bigger goal, and don't let too many people influence you along that way. I think we all have our separate journeys, and we all can get there in many ways. And you're always going to have, especially as you get more people looking at you, everybody's got their own opinions and they got their own ways of doing things that they want to influence on you. And some of those people have bigger influence than you want them to have. So it's more important to stay focused on what got you there from the beginning. And once you do, like, just don't get lost in the sauce, you know? Just don't get lost in the bullshit behind it.
That's deep, man.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff you learn through going through this, for sure.
From stuff that you know now, would you have done anything differently in your career?
I'm not going to say I would do it differently because I don't regret anything. I might have done some stuff better, though. I might have... I wouldn't let too many negativity affect me once I kind of... Okay, when I first made, like, the big push, right? When you see me, like, do the Michael Chiesa thing and the whole shebang. I don't know. I didn't know that that was going to happen.
No regrets with that, by the way.
No regrets. Okay. No regrets. No regrets. But even afterwards, you know, the calling out Tony Ferguson and getting that fight way too soon, way before I was supposed to get that fight.
But that's what made me a fan of you, too, by the way.
Was like, taking that fight?
Was just him. Like how you just didn't give no fucks. Like, you made your presence felt, and you separated yourself from the pack.
Yeah.
And your confidence, your bravado, like I said, rambunctious at the beginning of the podcast, but mm-hmm. like that's what made me a Kevin Lee fan. And that was appreciate way that. Before anyone knew who the schmo was in MMA.
I can appreciate that. Sometimes I regret it. I'm not going to lie to you. Sometimes I regret having that overriding kind of confidence to do something you know you shouldn't do. Like, I knew I wasn't ready for Tony at the time that I took that fight. I just was like, all right, we're going to do it. And I'm going to put my balls out there, and we're going to see what it is. My balls was bigger than my brain. sometimes you regret that a little bit. But it made me appreciate that I am able to do that more than other people are, I think.
For sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
Sorry, I forgot what I was talking about before.
David interrupted.
No.
Yeah, you're kind of just reflecting.
No regrets.
Yeah.
Oh, what would I do different or better? After that, and after I took a loss, I let the negativity kind of get to me a little bit. When I knew beforehand that was what I was going to do, I knew that once you get shine, negativity comes with it. But just because you know that doesn't mean you are going to handle it right. So I feel like I could have handled the negativity and the bullshit that came with it a whole lot better, other than making it put me in my shell, if that makes sense.
Was it more like negativity on social media? Or
yeah, social media and from people that I know and respect. I feel like they started to look at me a little different. When I feel like, man, y'all know me for so many years. Like, why are y'all looking at me different? Like, you should know what's in my head, and you should know what I already have planned, which is a dumb way of thinking. I should have been more communicative with the people that I respected to. I let their negativity kind of get to me a little bit.
It's crazy. It's if you allow it to get to you, if you read it all, it comes to you. But, you know, the older you get, the more mature you get, you always find ways to tune it out and to not let anything break your mindset.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to not let it break you and not let it put you in a shell, for sure. So if I could redo anything, it's probably that. But that's beyond fighting, I think. That's just growing as a person. You know what I mean? That's part of just my life journey, that's all.
But you're so young, too. You're not even 30 yet.
Yeah. It's a lot of way
to go. I miss it's being in my 20s.
It's a fucking way to go. It's a lot of way to go. I think 30 is going to be like, I don't know. I think 30 is going to be lit. I think 30 is going to be like the years, you know. It's going to be the best years of my life, for sure.
So do you know where in South Florida you're going to live? Because you're not going to live on Miami, like South Beach and stuff like that. You're probably going to live towards Sanford to an extent, right?
Fort Lauderdale. I've already looked at some townhouses out there. So, I'll probably dig that.
So Midwest, you've been a Midwest guy. Mm-hmm. I know Detroit, Motown Phenom.
Mm-hmm.
One of the great nicknames in the sport, by the way. Love that nickname. Mm-hmm. You've been in the West Coast.
Yep.
I know you've been in Canada.
Now south.
Now you're going to the south, southeast. Like,
yep.
Someone who could pick up a different lifestyle mm-hmm. and live at a different portion of the country. Like,
mm-hmm.
that only adds, you know, adds value in mm-hmm. so many different aspects of life.
And I feel like it's going to, you know, it's going to elevate me a lot. My uncle told me when I was like a kid something that I always kind of admired about him. He said he's a chameleon. He said he can blend in wherever you need to get in, he can fit in, you know? And I kind of have adapted that a little bit. I'm trying my best to stop the boundaries between people, you know? I grew up very black or white. He was either black or he was white, you know? And since I've become an adult, I've constantly just tried to stop looking at the world that way And I think by experiencing these different forms of life, that's the only way I'm going to be able to do it.
And I do know a lot of people like to say where traveling helps you grow because you learn so much about different people, different mm-hmm. cultures and everything.
Yeah, Miami is totally different too. It's totally, it's not even like.
It's its own world.
even Vegas is different. Like, yeah. We're both not from here. She's born and raised here.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Miami is different.
This is different, but Miami is like a different level. Country, you know?
Yeah. It
is.
And just prepare for the traffic.
Yeah. I know.
But you have your Tesla.
What's crazy is I've been there maybe like for the last, nice. I want to say for the last like 9 months, I've been there on and off like a lot. It just seemed like everything kind of lined up for this promotion to be down there too. So I've already experienced that fucking traffic is no joke.
Oh,
shit.
It's terrible.
Yeah, I'm bringing my Tesla down.
And I was in L.A. It makes L.A. in a way seem nice.
Yeah, that shit's terrible.
Does your Tesla?
Expensive as fuck. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Do you still make your Tesla like it drives itself? Or mm-hmm. I feel like I saw that video a few years ago.
Yeah. I can't wait for the new one to come out.
The video he put out where he's playing video games while you're driving.
You still do that?
Yeah, hell yeah. Every day. On my way here, I did that.
Wow.
What do you mean?
Yeah. Which game?
Not today. I didn't play the game, usually Super Smash Brothers. Yeah. Usually into Super Smash Brothers. I'm not going to go far. I can't wait till they release like some AR goggles. I think Apple's making some next year. So you can play the game while you drive. Probably.
You played Smash as a kid. Did you play Mario Kart?
Yeah, a little bit.
I like Mario Kart more than Smash.
Yeah. Really? Mario Kart more than Smash?
Yeah. Well, because in Mario Kart, I would do battles more than I would do races, and Block Fort is like a nostalgic level for anyone out there listening knows about Mario Kart and Block Fort.
Yeah, I don't know Block Fort, but I fuck with Mario Kart.
I figured you
Mario
would.
Mario Kart heavy, you know.
I figured you would.
But over Smash, I don't know, bro. We gonna debate on that.
But going back to what you were saying about being a chameleon, like, and just going with it, it's almost like you have to take yourself out of the equation, your background and everything like that. Just try to blend in as a chameleon to observe what the hell's in front of you and what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's just the learning process right there. That's the entertaining part is just mm-hmm. learning, it's like that, huh? Okay, mm-hmm. I see.
And then you figure out different ways to entertain people 100%. Too, you know?
100%.
The great thing about fighting is it's a universal language. Mm-hmm. We don't have to say nothing, you know? We just go out there and anybody can understand it, right? Maybe not the ground game. And it takes a while for people to kind of get that part. Especially when you see like guys like me and Charles Oliveira like on the ground, it's like you got to really understand it to get it. But fighting's universal, you know, and I think at some point we got to learn how to entertain all different types of people. Some people like that big bravado, talking shit and all that. Some people like the more Canelo Alvarez type of approach, and you know, there's many different ways to
entertain slapping people. Caleb Plant.
Yeah, it was pretty good, huh?
that drove up the pay-per-view buys, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty fucking good, too. Good two-piece. I only hit Chiesa with one. He hit him with two.
And then Masvidal got three against Leon Edwards.
Yeah, but I don't know. We don't count that.
Okay. That's true. You brought up his name, too, Oliveira. I feel like him fighting you is what, you know, put him on this map to being in that conversation to have the interim fight at least at that time for the interim vacant.
Yeah.
Yep. After me, he fought Tony. I knew he was going to smash Tony too. His level is just way too above on the ground. And then, then fought for the vacant title.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of things surrounding that fight. I want that fight back, but we'll see. We'll make that happen in the future at some point. I got to prove I'm the best at 65 first. And then at some point, maybe we'll make that fight.
What would you have done differently?
To prepare for that fight?
Yeah.
It took more time. Took more time for sure. After I fought Gillespie, I needed some time off. I needed some time to let it sink in. And instead, I just rode the wave. And I was talked into riding the wave and going into the next fight.
Okay, so then back up to the fight for Gillespie, because that's where arguably you look the best anyone's ever seen you.
Appreciate that.
What did you do for that fight and that made it like you have to take time off after that fight? Where you mentally felt like you want to take time off, but you rode the wave and listened to those people to mm-hmm. go for it further?
what leading up to that fight made me.
Yeah.
It was that moment. That moment was so big that I knew I had to let it sit in. It was my first real camp with Firas. So I felt like we learned a lot about each other in there. And I was just trying to get my feet underneath me in Canada and in Montreal. But then I had to go back home to kind of handle some stuff here in Vegas. But then I took that fight, and it was like right back into it. It was like right back going up to Canada and in the middle of winter, too, which it had been 6 or 7 years since I had dealt with the winter. That's another layer on top of it.
I don't
want to
know how cold it is.
That's why I did my 18 years in Chicago as a kid, and I got out.
Yeah, yeah. So it was a lot to deal with on top of that. They flew me to Brazil on one day and then back. And all this happened within a 5-week span of getting ready to fight somebody like Oliveira. And I think part of it was I underestimated Oliveira until midway through the second round. Then I was like, oh, this dude's legit. Fuck.
I remember right. I remember you flew overseas to do like a face-off with him at yep. some point before the fight. Where was that, and what was it like facing off with him in that moment?
That was one of the craziest journeys that I had ever. Like, it was a 2-day trip, 40 hours of flying, but because of the time difference, it took place in like a day. I flew there on a Monday, and I was back by Wednesday. And they just, I don't know, it was weird. It was strange. And it was during the whole Corona thing, but we didn't know that it was Corona yet, you know, the general public.
What month was that?
It was January.
And that was in Brazil.
It was February. I'm sorry. I took the fight in January. That was February. Maybe February 12th, something like that, in Brazil.
So the world shut down the month later in March.
Right.
You fought, was it the 14th?
Right.
So day after my 30th birthday, which it never felt like I turned 30 on March 13th night because the world shut down.
Yeah, he still gets mad at me because he's like, you didn't do anything for my 30th birthday, but it's because the world shut down. Yeah, I couldn't do anything.
So when's your birthday? March?
March 13th.
13th,
so it's the day before your fight. So, no, we made up for it. We were going to go to Horseshoe Bend. We were gonna
you know, hike and all
that
stuff.
We ended up doing that following Thanksgiving, right before that Thanksgiving. So I stopped caring. She just brings it up to tease me. She just brings it up to tease me.
I feel you. But it was, like you said, it was a pandemic, you know? What could we do? But I think it started way before that. These big companies and all these, you know, the world kind of knew before we knew, I think.
Before we accepted it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't accept it until like fucking June probably, you know?
It's crazy because you are technically the first fight.
I know.
You and that's the first fight. Of the entire pandemic, because you can say what we saw in Jacksonville when it was Tony and
Justin Gaethje
and other people fought too, obviously. But I remember that fight specifically. Mm-hmm. But like your fight was technically the first fight, and didn't you do it in an empty arena in Brazil?
Yeah, and it was supposed to be full.
Did they have masks on?
Came to us 3 days before the people.
That were there.
Honestly, it's hard to remember. I get tunnel vision. It's. Yeah. I don't remember seeing anybody else but Charles that night.
I can understand.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of Charles,
I don't think somebody had masks though.
But I wouldn't
did
know.
Have masks before.
Yeah.
Well, I think Charles. You know, when we spoke like 2 weeks ago about kind of what's next for him, and I know Justin Gaethje has been talking about or been deserving. David's laughing now.
No, I know what you're going to say. I'm laughing.
Yeah. Well, no, because I heard in an interview recently that Charles said. He may be waiting for Connor.
Mm-hmm. I knew that's what you're gonna say. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, what do you think about this whole lightweight situation? And we have Beneil versus Islam next.
And they can't
months.
Give Connor off of his losses a title shot.
Yeah.
Like that would delegitimize anything. If I'm Justin Gaethje, like what he said, he'd throw a dolly or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe I read that. I would go scorched earth. I'd burn the place down. He's the most
Gaethje,
deserving. If I'm Gaethje, I'd burn the place down.
He is most deserving.
He is.
You know, but part of me want to say they should give it to Connor. Part of me thinks that Oliveira kind of deserves that. He's been in the sport a long time. He got a lot of fights.
He's got the records for like most submission victories for sure.
And he's got a lot of. I think he's got the record for most fights before actually getting a title.
Yeah, show. That's true. Yeah, and he's got more records than that, but that he does have as well.
And he doesn't have that much. He just don't have it in him to get that big, so he's got to make the name off of somebody.
Well, here's the problem.
Let's just be real.
He can't speak English. If he could speak English, it'd be completely different. Yeah. Like if he could do this.
Yeah, but if he can, I think it could make him a huge hometown, home country, not town. It'll make him a hero if he beats Conor McGregor, right? You know, Conor beat Jose. I think Brazilians still feel some way about that. I think they're still kind of bitter about that. Let's go ahead and give it to him. And honestly, Conor's not really going to earn it. You know, Conor's not going to beat Darush or...
Then my advice to Oliveira, if that's what he really wants to do, get a dictionary or just memorize it. Call out Conor McGregor in English. How could they say no to that if he says it in English?
You know, I guess the way I'm looking at it is from the UFC's perspective, and it's if you want to make the most bang for your buck, which is what the UFC's business model is, then you make Charles and Conor happen
in Brazil
by any means
in Brazil for him to have redemption in front of his people.
Yep.
I don't know which city it was. Was it Sao Paulo? Was it the other one? I have no idea.
Rio de Janeiro. Brasilia, I think, is the capital. That's where I fought him at. So
okay,
maybe yeah. Give
wherever city it was. Give him the opportunity
in a soccer stadium.
That works too.
Oh, okay. Do it in a soccer stadium.
Go to the nearest soccer stadium to that arena.
Let's do it.
They fill it up.
Of course. Okay.
I think that'll be huge. You know,
that's business.
I think it's business. It is business, and if they really want to get as big as possible, I think they probably do that. Connor and Charles, 2022. If not, what do you do? You do Charles and Gaethje. That's gonna do decent. Charles gonna beat him.
Well, if Charles okay, do decent. Okay, so then why can't Charles fight Gaethje and then after that he fights Connor? If you think Charles is gonna beat Gaethje, or are you too afraid to risk that?
Why make Charles do it again, you know? Why make him do it again? These last two fights that he's had, he's put a lot of damage on his body. A lot. He's taken a lot of damage. So, why?
Who had a better opportunity to win that fight against Charles? Chandler or Poirier?
Chandler.
Yeah. Because of what he did in that first round?
Yeah. And he just, I don't know, it just seemed... like Charles got more confidence about him after that fight. Mm. It's gonna be really hard to beat him now.
I never seen him celebrate like that after the Chandler fight.
I know. Mm-hmm.
That was personality. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you didn't see it. He's got it, but if he knew English.
You think the English thing is gonna stop him? Yeah, probably.
It's not gonna stop him, but it's like it could only help him in this market. Mm-hmm. He'd be a star.
You have to be huge in America. You know,
why is he huge? He's got a great personality and he speaks English. He's not from America. Same thing could be for, I'm not saying same thing because Izzy's his own personality. Izzy's larger than life. Yeah. I mean, he's getting the rightful roses that he's earned, but like Oliveira could do that if he spoke English.
He could, but it's not going to happen. Let's be honest. Okay. He's not going to, if he wanted to do that, then he would have to move to America and, you know what I mean? Kind of understand our culture a little bit.
Why fix what's not broken?
I don't see it. Yeah. I don't see it happening. I don't think that's him as a person, you know? Like for me, like I like to always travel, right? I like to move and kind of blend in. I think he is set in who he is, and that's how he should be. That's cool, you know? Let him.
You didn't sign with Habib's promotion. Where would you have signed?
One was one of them. Honestly, I probably would have went. I would have probably did my own thing.
What does that mean?
I probably did my own thing. I would have started my own promotion. If I didn't, that's the day before I actually did the signing and did that press conference. We were talking about doing my own thing, but this made more sense once we hammered out some of the finer points of the contract.
Well, down the line, would you still want to do your own thing?
Yeah, at some point, you know. I think eventually we will become our own promoters, as we should. But that's a whole side to the game that is very complicated, and you got to put in just as much effort on that side as you do to the actual fighting side. So for now, I can be a full-fledged fighter. You know, I can focus solely on the punches and the kicks and the shit like that, and leave the promoting to somebody else. But at some point, yeah, why not?
It's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Hey, as we wrap up the year 2021, as we wrap things up at the Schmozone podcast, you're a fantastic guest. What do you want to leave the world with as lasting thoughts for the year of 2021?
The lasting thoughts, year 2021. Going into this new year, I don't know, I just want to embrace, like, individuality. You know, I think each one of us is so different and so unique in our own paths and our own ways and our own come-ups. And, like, you are the only one with your story. Like, let's embrace that. Let's get away from the bullshit of the world and what you're supposed to be, and you're supposed to act like this, and you're supposed to be like this. Like, no, just be you and be individual, and then it's gonna raise everybody up. You know, I think the more you can just be open and just be free, it'll raise everybody.
And hopefully we'll see you with a new tooth soon.
Right. Hopefully, hopefully not, because that means somebody knocked my shit out.
That means someone punched him in the face.
Yeah, that means somebody knocked my shit out.
But I know how bad you want it.
Yeah, I do. I want it to happen.
Or just get a dentist to pluck it.
That is a fantastic icebreaker.
No, I can't have the dentist do it. It's got to be somebody's got to knock the shit out. But
my dad practiced dentistry for like over 30 years. He'd love hearing that.
Yeah, tell him. Ask him how. What's the best way? Do they hit it like solid with my mouth open?
I'll text it to you.
Do they hit the jaw?
I'll text it to you.
All right, yeah, please. Yeah.
I don't know if you want the jaw, though. You don't want that.
No, I don't know.
You don't want the chin.
Of course not, but I mean.
Let's avoid the chin.
I'm just saying, how do you knock the tooth out?
We'll figure it out.
You have to hit me in the nose and it.
Remember those old cartoons? You just tie a rope to it and someone just leaves it. No, that's great. No, but to your point, though, too, mm-hmm. I like the embrace and individuality.
Stay true.
We all live one life. We're all adults. No one has the answers. We're all faking it till we make it. Not really faking
it. That's a fact.
Yeah,
that's a fact. You don't figure that out till you get older.
You create your own path. You blaze your own trail. But not everyone can do it. Not everyone is willing to put in the work to do it. But those who are shall be rewarded. That's a good way to put it. Mm-hmm. Episode 89 of the Schmozone podcast.
Love it. Love it. The Schmozone. The Schmozone. I love it. Yeah, you guys are creating something big here. I like it.
Appreciate you.
We are out.